The opinions expressed in this program are those of the guests and host and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Topeka Capital Journal, CJ Online, or Morris Communications.
It's time for Jim Cates at CJ Online. News, opinion, interviews, and community conversation, live and online. Join Jim and his guests by calling 295-1150 or emailing jim.cates@cjonline.com. And now, from the Topeka Capital Journal and cjonline.com, here's the Dean of Talk Radio in Topeka, Jim Cates.
Good morning, Topeka. This hour is brought to you in part by Cooper Plumber, Cooper Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, folks. He works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm telling you, this guy never sleeps. So at any rate, if you've got an air conditioner that's on the fritz, well, you can give Coop the Plumber a call. 2 o'clock Sunday morning, he's just sitting on the edge of his bed waiting for your call. 267-4100, a great number to have written down with your other emergency numbers. You never know when that stool's going to clog up and you've got 15 people coming to the house in an hour. That's when you need that emergency phone number at your tips. Coop the Plumber. Coming up at 9 o'clock, we've got Jim Ogle coming on, TV 13, WIBW 13, and John Arnold. We'll be talking about the top stories of the week. Dave Jackson, of course, he'll be with me at 10, as he is each and every Friday. Lawn and Garden Tips, 8:30, I'm not sure what's going to happen. It's going to be an anything-can-happen half hour. But for the next 30 minutes, we're going to be visiting with Senator Derek Smith. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Now, Derek, you are a 10-year veteran of the Kansas State Senate. You were initially elected, I believe, in 2000, correct?
That is true. It's hard to believe how 10 years have gone under the bridge already, but they have.
Oh, boy. In five of those years, you've served as Senate Majority Leader?
That's right.
Okay. And, Derek, now you're running for AG, Attorney General.
I am.
You know, I was sniffing around on the Internet this morning to get a little background information on you. Now, you currently represent nine counties, and I think the nine counties that you represent, Derek, if I read it right, three of the nine counties are three of the more industrialized counties in Kansas, and three of which have virtually no industry.
That is true.
Which three are they on both sides of the spectrum?
The three that are heavily industrialized, and the measurement for that is there was a fellow named Dave Darling. I think he's retired now, but he was a faculty member out at K-State for a long time. He did these rankings every year, and it was sort of a per capita output ranking, but Montgomery, where I live, Wilson, and Allen all were in his top five consistently, and Chautauqua, Elk, and Woodson all were in his bottom five consistently.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I've always viewed Chautauqua. That's Coffeyville, isn't it?
No. Chautauqua is Montgomery. Chautauqua is Sedan and Cedarvale.
Okay. So Montgomery, that takes in Independence and Coffeyville then, correct?
That's exactly right. Independence, okay. Coffeyville, Caney, Cherryville, that area.
Okay, that makes sense. What industry is there in Wilson County? You say that's one of the top five?
It is. And
what's there?
Of course, in Fredonia, they have the Lafarge cement plant and its related industries, but then there's that cluster of industry in Neodesha on the old refinery grounds that's become an industrial park. There are several. Cobalt Boats is perhaps one of the better known. MEC Corporation, Aerosol Corporation, Neodesha Plastics. There are a couple of others as well.
Now, is Columbus in your senatorial district?
It's not. It's east of me over in Cherokee County.
Okay, because they've got, Crossland Construction, I believe?
You bet.
700 employees?
Yeah, great Kansas company, and boy, they do a lot of work all over, but especially in this part of the state.
Okay. Derek, why AG?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is I've always had an interest in the public safety basket of issues. As you know, Jim, because we've talked about it over the years on your program, that in the 10 years I've served in the legislature, public safety, criminal justice, law and order issues have always been sort of at the top of my list. And I am really interested in the idea of being able to now take a lot of the laws I've written over the past decade and move over to the implementation and oversight standpoint and make sure they're carried out the way they were intended. The other basket of issues on that, the Attorney General is more than just the safety file. understands how state government works, and somebody who understands that the relationship between the state government and the federal government is not static, and the state's interests have to be defended in order for that relationship to remain in balance. And so I'm not sure that those areas are priorities for folks in the other party who have the office now. They are priorities for me. Things like, for example, joining in the litigation on the federal health care bill. I think that's an overreach by the federal Congress. There are some Clean Air Act issues that I think are overreaches by the federal Congress, and they're challenges we ought to be participating in.
Senator Derek Smith's my guest. Folks, if you have a comment or a question, you can always email us at jim.cates@cjonline.com. And again, jim.cates@cjonline.com. Derek, when you're out, you know, on the campaign trail, what's the number one issue? I know here in Topeka, there's been a lot of press on our Department of Corrections, especially, of course, our women's prison facility here in Topeka. In terms of the management, are you hearing much about our Department of Corrections? Is that going to be an issue in your run for Attorney General? Or once you get outside of the Capitol Journal circulation area, is anybody talking about this issue?
You know, the two things that people bring up consistently when I visit with them about the AG's office and the Attorney General's race, one is public safety generally. People want to make sure they have an Attorney General committed to public safety who understands sort of the big picture on how the various agencies interact in order to produce the end result, which is violent criminals removed from the street and some type of rational intervention with everybody who breaks the law in order to try to get them back on track and make sure the public is safe. That's number one. The other thing that people often say, and I don't know exactly why it is, maybe it's because there's been so much national news coverage, but litigation with respect to the federal health care bill. Those seem to be the two most common subjects that Kansans raise from time to time when I'm out and about talking about the race.
Now, Senator Smith, you brought up the health care situation. How many attorney generals throughout the state or throughout the country have filed suit basically saying no to this federal health care bill? And B, has Kansas, are we part of the suit now? If not, why not? Where does all of this stand?
Last I checked, there were 21 states. I haven't checked for a few weeks, so I may be off by one here or there. There are actually two lawsuits pending. Virginia is on its own in a lawsuit challenging provisions of the federal law in a federal district court in Virginia. And then a cluster of other states, 20 or 21 others, are together in the Northern District of Florida in federal court and challenging. There probably will be other challenges before this all gets settled. This is probably an issue for the long haul, not a short-term issue. Kansas is not among those. Our administration made the decision not to participate in the lawsuit, and I think that I disagree with that.
Okay, 21 states. Are there other states lined up to do the same, or are we pretty much down to a 21 have filed suit, the other 29 aren't?
I suspect the answer to that is going to depend on what happens in the early part of these two court proceedings. I think there are probably a number of other states that are sort of watching, let others do the early heavy lifting and then watching to see how that goes. And there may be a pile-on effect if things go well early on. There may not if it doesn't. In my take on all this, there are no guarantees in where this is all headed. There probably will be some legal roadblocks along the way. But the bottom line is that the fundamental question being presented, which is, what is the scope of the federal commerce power, and does it allow Congress to order American citizens to go out and purchase a product, to go out and engage in interstate commerce as opposed to regulating commerce that already exists, is that within the scope of the Constitution? And that question is novel. It has not been answered in the course of American history. Consequently, I think it ultimately is going to reach the U.S. Supreme Court. Whether it reaches the court based on one of these lawsuits that's currently pending, or whether it's another lawsuit not yet filed, whether it's soon or whether it's years down the road, those things are all to be determined. But the fundamental question is a big question that ultimately I think the Supremes are going to have to answer.
Senator Derek Smith's my guest, if you just tuned in. And Senator Smith, 10-year member of Kansas legislature. He's been a 10-year senator in Kansas representing the 15th district, correct? District number 15. And takes in 9 counties in southeast Kansas. And Derek Smith wants to be your next attorney general. Derek, when you're out on the campaign trail, you know, you mentioned crime, obviously, safety, one issue, and of course this national health insurance debate is another one. How about illegal immigration? You know, oddly, this is going to be one of the cornerstone issues, you know, in our primary run for Secretary of State, because we have Kris Kobach running, the primary architect of the new Arizona laws, running for Secretary of State. But viewing this through a potential attorney general's eyes, are you hearing a lot about illegal immigration? If so, where do you want to go with this issue if elected in November?
Sure. There are people talking about it, no question. I haven't heard a great deal of focus on it in the context of this campaign. Most of the discussion is about, you know, what's happening in Arizona, what's happening or isn't happening in Washington. And then, as you point out, obviously it has become an issue in the Secretary of State's race, and so there are people talking about it in that context. You know, I think most folks agree what ought to happen here is the federal government ought to do its job. Unlike health care, which is nowhere mentioned in the United States Constitution, immigration is a function expressly assigned to the federal government by the U.S. Constitution and therefore by the people of this country. And yet the federal government has failed woefully in dealing with that. And so it's left to us in the states to sort of figure out what, if anything, we can do to try to address the problem that isn't a problem that states are either well-equipped or legally assigned to address. So it's sort of a backwards situation. I think a lot of folks are watching the Arizona law. One of the things that I think there is some appeal in that approach, just conceptually, is that it is focused on the people who actually broke the law, people who came here illegally in violation of federal law, as opposed to some previous state efforts which have been focused on third parties, like local businesses or otherwise, you know, law-abiding American citizens who work for a local company who could have, for example, lost their jobs if the company lost its operating license as a result of hiring illegal aliens. So my sense is that the Arizona approach, most people feel like it's a little more on track than some of the previous efforts. Where it ultimately leads us, I certainly don't know. I do know it's a little peculiar to have the federal government choosing not to step up and do its job of securing the borders and enforcing the immigration law, but then at the same time choosing to step up and actually threaten to file suit to stop states that try to step in and fill the void, which is what looks like it's going to happen in Arizona. So, a lot of frustration on that.
Well, Senator Derek Smith, if elected Attorney General, are you saying, would you lead the charge for Kansas to enact an Arizona type of law?
Do we need that
in Kansas?
Sure. I don't think that, you know, we're going to need an Attorney General out there on the point of the spear, so to speak, saying here's what we ought to do with Kansas laws on immigration. But I do think we need an Attorney General who is committed that once the policymakers decide if Kansas enacts a law, whether it's Arizona-like or otherwise, is committed to standing up and saying we are going to defend this in the courts against all challenges, wherever they may come from, the United States government, as it is in Arizona, private groups, individuals, whatever it is. You've got to have a legal team that's willing to stand up and fight for the decisions the policymakers make.
Well, Derek, I know you've got a great reputation as a state senator, of course, a leader in the Senate. You're what I view as a moderate Republican, and I don't say that lightly because I think we have far too many liberal Republicans serving at in all levels of government, but I certainly don't put you in the liberal camp. I truly would put you in the centrist, moderate camp.
Thank you,
Tim. Having said that, Derek, what is your legislative agenda in 2011 if you're elected? If you're our next Attorney General, where do you want to go legislatively, looking at what we have on the books in Kansas today?
Absolutely. I'm not at a point yet, you know, it's a long time until the start of the session. I'm not at a point yet that sort of rolling out a specific list of here are the things I'll be advocating for in the 2011 session. And by the way, I hope to be a general, but even if that doesn't work out, I'll still be the Senate Majority Leader in one way or the other. I'll be in a position that I'll be advocating for some type of public safety agenda in the 2011 session. I've done that every year I've been in the Senate, and I intend to continue as long as I'm able to serve in public office. But we don't have sort of the point-by-point yet. Got a few ideas that folks have suggested. We're doing some homework on them. But that does raise a point that I think is worth raising. I believe one of the key jobs of the Attorney General is to be the principal voice, the focusing spokesperson for the state's public safety agenda each year in the legislature. Now, the Attorney General is not a lawmaker. He's not a legislator. But he is the state's top statewide elected legal officer. And I think it's an important role to stand up to bring the various law enforcement groups together to coordinate that agenda, to work with legislators interested in public safety issues, and to say, and obviously with the governor, and to say, here are the priorities for this coming session. And that's a role that has not been played in recent years that I think has been missed.
Senator Schmidt, are you going to be looking at privatization of prisons? This we've talked about this two or three times before when you've been on the show, because I know in your senatorial district, Yates Center is right in the heart of your senatorial district, and for years they have been lobbying, attempting to build a private prison, you know, the confines of Lake Yates Center.
Right.
It has gone nowhere. Senator Schmidt, I know this has got to be extremely frustrating to you. I don't understand it, because everything I've read, heard, witnessed, have seen shows definitively that, you know, we can house inmates a lot cheaper if we turn it over to the private sector. And now we're everybody's scrambling, attempting to hold the line on government spending. Shouldn't we be looking at incarceration as a possible means of tightening our belts?
Sure. Right. As you know, Jim, to point out, we have talked about this before over the years. I believe that makes sense. Properly regulated, vigorously overseen private facilities have the potential to provide incarceration services for Kansas at less burden to Kansas taxpayers than reliance solely on publicly paid for facilities. I've made that case for years. The Senate, a majority in the Kansas Senate, has agreed with that, I think, five or six times over the course of my service. We've never been successful in getting that measure through the House of Representatives. I think in large part that is because of we've had significant opposition from the governor's office over the past 8 years. And I finally have, seen the writing on the wall and have stopped pushing that issue every year because it was clear it wasn't going to become law. We are going to have a new governor after the elections in November. And from whatever position I'm serving in, I think it would be a conversation worth engaging in with that new governor, whether going down the road of authorizing some type of private facility is a smart move as part of the overall mix of public safety in Kansas. But ultimately, that's going to be a call that the new governor has to make.
Senator Schmidt, taking a look at Senator Brownback, Senator Holland, Andrew Gray, any one of these three individuals made a statement on where they stand on this issue?
If they
taking
have,
a look at the privatization concept.
Sure. If they have, Jim, I'm not aware of it. I haven't had the conversation with them, and I don't know.
Derek Schmidt, what separates you from our current Attorney General Six? Two or three of the defining issues.
Right.
Where you are going to agree to disagree. What would, the top three issues be?
Sure.
Clearly separates the two of you.
Sure. I think the experience we bring to the table is very different. I bring a broad experience in the law, and I also bring a broad experience in state government. I know the client in a way that I think the other side does not. That's number one. Number two, we've already talked about the health care bill. It's not the centerpiece of our campaign, but it is something that's on people's minds, and there is such a bright line distinction between the two of us. I believe it's a fight worth fighting because it goes to the issue of the ability of Kansans to govern ourselves in areas historically reserved for states. The other side difference, perhaps temperamentally or otherwise, judgment related, in the willingness to stand up and be a leader for public safety and not just react to cases as they come across the desk. As I've already mentioned, I think the AG ought to be a central focal point for public safety leadership in the state of Kansas.
Now, you know, the issue of public safety, I'm sure you're hearing something different in Colby and Goodland than you're hearing in Wyandotte County, Shawnee County, Sedgwick County. We all look at safety through different eyes.
You know, there are many unifying principles, but the dynamics are different in different parts of the state in terms of what their immediate problems and needs are, to be sure to please.
Derek, sentencing guidelines, when I was in the legislature years ago, unfortunately it passed. When I was in the legislature back in 1992, I was a no vote on the sentencing guidelines because of the nonviolent crime aspect. You know, it's virtually impossible, as you well know, to send a convicted, unarmed home burglar to jail. You know, it takes three convictions, I believe, still, doesn't it? If that home burglar is unarmed. And it's so frustrating. Looking at the issue of sentencing guidelines through the eyes of an attorney general, Derek, do you see anything that you're going to recommend legislatively to change our current guidelines?
Sure, Jim. You know, it's funny you mentioned the burglary piece. That's an area I've worked on. Now, when I came to the legislature, there was literally no end to the number of times that a person, criminal, could commit burglary, and provided, as you point out, they're not armed, they don't commit some other crime in the course of burgling a home, they would cycle right back out on the street, and here we go again. There's a three-time limit that you described, a special sentencing rule that says after a third conviction, at least, you're finally going to get some prison time. It's something I worked on for a couple of years, worked closely with law enforcement, and we finally got enacted into law because the revolving door on burglaries was just incredibly frustrating to so many, not just in the law enforcement community, but in the public. There are areas that in the sentencing guidelines, particularly on property crimes, I don't think we have that balance just right. This goes to the broader issue of what would be the legislative agenda for 2011. As I said before, we're not at a point I'm prepared to say here are the point things that are going to rise to the top of the list. But I would say, in general, I think that with respect to property crimes in Kansas, we don't have the balance right at this point. Obviously, you can't, nor should you, just lock up everybody who commits any property crime. That would not be the right response. But we also ought not just have a green light out there for folks who commit property crimes, knowing that at the end of the day, they're going to cycle through the court system, get probation, and be right back out on the street. You've got to intervene early, you've got to be firm, and you've got to say that violating somebody's property is a serious crime that the state's not going to tolerate. So it's an area of interest to me, Jim, and I think we ought to continue to try to deal with it.
Derek, we appreciate you coming on with us. Real quick, your Shawnee County chairpersons are...
We haven't announced that yet.
Okay.
We'll be doing that in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, okay.
We have a great team in Shawnee County, and we're going to be growing it, I think, over the next few weeks.
Well, your treasurer is the Shawnee County, and Dwayne Nightingale. Now, he's your state treasurer, correct?
Actually, Dwayne is working with us on the campaign. Great guy.
Now, is he your treasurer?
But he is not my treasurer.
Oh, okay.
My treasurer is a gentleman from Wichita, a fellow named Gary Aller Heiligen, retired CPA down there.
Oh, okay. Okay, and you, Dwayne's served so many times as treasurer of so many campaigns, including mine 20 years ago. So
he's a terrific fella, and I'm delighted to have his support.
Yeah, you betcha. You bet. Derek, if somebody wants more information, if they want to get involved in your campaign, how do they get in touch with Senator Derek Smith?
Best way to do it on the campaign side are either call us. Campaign number is 620-779-1000. 620-779-1000, or just log on to the campaign website, and you can reach us through that, and that is www.derekschmidt.org. DerekSchmidt.org.
Okay. Derek, we appreciate you coming on with us, and we'll do this again between now and Election Day.
Great. Jim, thanks for having me on, and let me just wish everybody a happy 4th of July weekend.
Okay, and the same to you, Derek. Have a happy and safe 4th. Okay, Senator Derek Smith wants to be our next Attorney General, and folks, he's got a reputation throughout the state as being just bright as bright can be, and I got to know Derek a couple of years ago, and so impressed with him in terms of his intelligence and a very, very astute leader in the state, to say the least. Okay, coming up, we've got a half hour of open lines. We might have a couple of callers coming in that I talked to earlier this morning. That's a possibility at 9 o'clock. Jim Ogle with WIBW TV 13 is coming in, along with John Arnold. And at 10 o'clock, Dave Jackson, he'll be with us. Stay tuned. A lot more to come today. I'm Jim Cates.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in Mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunor, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Feudinghaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Welcome back. Brickhouse Antiques, 37th and Burlingame. Folks, if you're looking for an antique, you can run by Brickhouse Antiques 7 days a week, or you can simply give them a call and find out whether they have what you're looking for, whether they've got it in stock. It's that simple. 37th and Burlingame, right off of I-470. Their phone number, 266-6000, Brickhouse Antiques. And we've got the two co-owners of Brickhouse Antiques. They're going to be joining me on the show next Friday. So they're going to be with us for 15, 20 minutes or so, and that's coming up next Friday. Brickhouse Antiques, along with Bob Beatty. Bob Beatty's coming in next Friday as well at 8 o'clock. And we're going to be talking about the debate that will have been held then. Bob Beatty is going to be one of the two people, I believe, on the dais for the TV 27/Capital Journal Senatorial debate, and that's going to be Tuesday, next Tuesday from 6 to 7, Jerry Moran, Congressman Jerry Moran, and Congressman Todd Tehart. They're going to go at it again next Tuesday on TV 27 from 6 to 7. And Bob and I will be discussing the debate next Friday at 8 o'clock, so you don't want to miss that. Monday, it's a holiday. We're not going to be here. Nope, we're taking the day off Monday, but we are going to be here Tuesday. And coming in Tuesday, Tim Richer. Tim's always our Monday guest from 8 to 9, so Tim's coming in Tuesday. And he'll be with me from 8 to 8:45. And then coming in at 9 o'clock Tuesday morning, City Councilman Jeff Preisner. It's been a while since we've had Jeff on the show, so he'll be joining me. And Roger Farthing's coming in for a few minutes as well. And that's all coming up next Tuesday on the show. So if you want to get an update on what's happening at City Hall, well, Tim does it at 8 o'clock, and then we're going to see City Hall through the eyes of Jeff Preisner. And I'll be asking Jeff when he comes on Tuesday if, in fact, he is going to run for office, if he's going to run for re-election next year. All kinds of rumors on the street, most of which are saying, nah, he's not going to do it. So we'll see what we can find out next week. And I know that one of the things I'll be talking to Tim Rencher about next Tuesday is our visioning, Heartland Visioning. Well, they're back at the public trough again. They formally ask our Shawnee County Commissioners, I believe yesterday, for another $30,000. Our Shawnee County Commission gave this Heartland Visioning Group $30,000 in 2008 and 2009, another $30,000. And now Heartland Visioning has said, yep, we want $30,000 more this year, plus we would like $30,000 a year through 2013. Now, folks, I'm just looking at what Heartland Visioning's accomplished. I'm not sure, but I do know what Think Big Topeka has accomplished, and they've accomplished a lot in this community, believe you me, just as far as turning the whole attitude of this community around and giving us such a positive look at the future. This Think Big Topeka group has certainly done it, and we're talking about a group of young activists, none of which were that well known in this community before they took the bull by the horns and got this whole Google search going. That hasn't cost us a dime of taxpayer money. That's been a freebie. It shows what the private sector can do if the private sector just becomes engaged and involved in the process. So at any rate, I don't know whether our county commission's going to belly up for another $30,000 this year, 2011, 2012, 2013. But folks, this is your tax money that's being spent for Heartland Visioning. And Heartland Visioning, nothing wrong with the process as long as the private sector is paying for it. Go for it. But again, when we start at the public trough, $30,000 from our county commission, $30,000 or so from the city of Topeka, we're talking real money to accomplish. I'm not sure that Heartland Visioning is accomplishing what it set out to do. Because when Heartland Visioning came to town, again with close to $1 million price tag, they were going to energize this community and come up with a whole new leadership group in this community. Well, they haven't done that. Folks, if you look at the chairs of the committees that Heartland Visioning has formed, I mean, it's the same people that have been involved in this community for eons, decades. Look at the list. These are not new names that are surfacing. These are the tried and true names from the past. And folks, there's nothing wrong with these tried and true names out of the past, all of which, you know, are truly committed to our community. But that wasn't the purpose of Heartland Visioning. The purpose was to open the doors to get fresh, new, innovative ideas. Well, this Think Big Topeka group has nothing whatsoever to do with Heartland Visioning. This was a group that just did it on their own. So, again, do we need to be spending this kind of money to fund Heartland Visioning when now there's definitive proof we've got this new team out there that's ready, willing, and able to go to work, you know, promoting Topeka, you know, to send Topeka down a different path, a more positive path? Rick Anderson wrote about this a couple of days ago in his column. And he's so right that, you know, taking a look at the whole downtown Topeka, what are we going to do with downtown Topeka? Well, there's a lot we can do if we just start thinking outside of the box. And if we're going to think outside of the box, that's when we need to bring, you know, a new, young, fresh team into this community. That basically saying, we don't want to look at the past. We don't want to look at what hasn't worked. We want to take a fresh, new, innovative approach and come up with something that will work. So, I don't know. We'll be talking about Heartland Visioning and the funding of it, or the lack thereof, with Tim Richard Tuesday. That's going to come up Tuesday on the show. So, if you have any thoughts on this, email me, jim.cates@cjonline.com. Would love to hear from you and your opinion. I could be off base. I've been off base before. I'll be off base again. So, just email me, jim.cates@cjonline.com, if you have any thoughts about this whole visioning process, good, bad, or indifferent. And 295-1150, let's go to the phones. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim Cates. This is Carol Holthouse. How are you this morning?
Well, Carol, how are you?
I am fabulous, thank you.
I know we visited very briefly earlier this morning.
Yes.
And you are supporting Todd T. Hart. In fact, you've got you're having an event, I think, at your home a week from Saturday.
Correct.
To support Todd T. Hart.
Yes.
Why Congressman T. Hart, Carol Holthouse?
For me, he is a, you know, he's certainly not a career politician. He's never afraid to stand on a side that's less popular, as long as it's right. He's very moral, and you know, he's always voted for life. He's never voted for tax increase for Kansas, and I believe he's the man for the people of Kansas. He's concerned. He's always here, and you know, never afraid of the hot issues.
Carol, what separates, in your opinion, Todd T. Hart from Jerry Moran?
I think more the tax issues and life issues for me.
Mm-hmm. Now, Congressman Moran, is their voting records appear to be, at least on paper, fairly similar.
I think they probably are, but for me, Todd is very genuine. I don't see that Washington has changed him, you know, and I don't see that happening in the future. He didn't vote for the bailout. He's not about giving out my money. And
well,
happy
I
for that.
Can go along with that. You bet. Carol, it's good to have you with us. Let's visit a few minutes. Do you know Jerry Moran personally?
I have met him once or twice, but do not know him to a great extent, no.
Okay. Yeah, early on, you know, I probably would have leaned to Jerry Moran because, you know, just taking a surface look at the voting records of T. Hart Moran, they appear to be on paper, you know, fairly close.
Right.
But, and I've known Jerry for 20 years, and Jerry has been a regular guest on this show over the past 12 years that I've been hosting.
Yeah.
A talk radio show up until this year. And I have asked Jerry two or three times over the past 3 to 4 months to come on the show, and just will not do it. Now, Todd T. Hart, when asked, Todd's been on this show, I think, two or three times. I know Vicki's been on the show a couple of times.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, delightful lady.
Yes,
and
they're
done a
fabulous
great job.
People. And
yeah.
They're very, very concerned for Kansas. I mean, this is truly a passion for Todd. It's not just a job. I mean, he has not been what I would call a typical, you know, Washington politician that gets there and tells the voters one thing and gets there and does something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Todd's always been a man of his word to me, and that's the most important thing that I can tell you that stands out for me, is he's been a man of his word, and he's not afraid on the tough issues, even when he's on the side that everybody does, you know, the majority of D.C. is not on the side, but he is.
Carol, taking a look, you know, and Todd T. Hart and I've talked about this, and I've talked about it with several guests on the show. If there was ever a race, T. Hart Moran, this appears to be the run for the roses.
Yes.
To where truly it is an endorsement race, a race to see who, in fact, can get the most endorsements.
Right, and Todd's just got some fabulous endorsements that, to me, really solidify him. He just was endorsed by Governor Sarah Palin. And Sean Hannity both.
Mm-hmm.
And those, to me, are some major conservative people that have issues of keeping the money in the people's pocket, issues of life, and, you know, that to me just really solidified the race.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, and, you know, I was surprised at Palin and Hannity's endorsement both because, you know, we're down to crunch time in this race. And right now, Congressman T. Hart is behind, apparently, in some of the polling.
Right.
And it shows the courage, I guess, of Palin and Hannity as well, you know, endorsing a candidate that is down in the polling numbers. But obviously, the Palin and Hannity endorsement can't do anything. But I'll tell you, jumpstart T. Hart's campaign.
Right.
These are major endorsements, both of which.
And very well earned, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Well, obviously, they endorse T. Hart because they truly perceive him to be the true conservative in the race.
Right.
And I'll have to take another look at Sean Hannity. Hannity hasn't been one of my favorites over the past year and a half because I've got a lot of respect for Ron Paul, and Sean Hannity, out of all the Republicans, just treats Ron Paul pretty shabbily at times, so...
Yeah.
But having said that, you know, I do appreciate Sean Hannity's, you know, courage to come into Kansas with an endorsement. Because normally, you know, in a situation like this, your national pundits will endorse the front runner, the leader of the race, and why take a chance on somebody that's running second?
Right, because they stand where they believe.
Yep. You betcha. So I've got a lot of respect for both of them. John Arnold just walked in the door. Carol Holthouse. John has joined us by phone.
Hi, how are you?
Good morning.
Great, good morning.
I don't sound like I'm on, Jim.
There you go.
There you go.
Now we got you. Okay.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
I don't know, Jim, Hannity and Palin coming into Kansas?
Well, not coming into Kansas, but with their endorsements.
Well, and
correct me if I'm wrong, Carol Holthouse.
It's as close as coming into Kansas as Quantrill did to Lawrence.
Carol, John and I sometimes agree to disagree on an issue or two.
Right.
Which is the reason I need to make sure that I vote in November to cancel John out on. Carol, do you look at these two endorsements? Are these the two biggies?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that, you know, that carries a lot of weight. And the fact that they're, you know, even though he is behind, they're not afraid to show where their issues are important to them, too. And somebody that believes in the same issues, that's the only reason you endorse somebody.
Carol, is anybody polling now, you know, on the heels of these two endorsements? Because obviously this gave Todd T. Hart a real shot in the arm.
Yeah, and I have not seen any numbers yet.
Yeah.
So...
Jim, there was a poll this morning just released on today, the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, I think that's what it was, said that Sarah Palin's endorsement is 52% negative. Generally, I wasn't about T-Hart, it was generally.
In the Republican Party? Or 52% negative, you know, with the population as a whole? I cannot see that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But we're talking about a run for the roses of the primary.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah.
Don't remember the detail. I don't know if they gave it, frankly, about who they polled.
Yeah, you know, in a general election, you know, I've got a good friend running in Nevada, Sharon Angle, that I've known for 15 years. You know, the Tea Party endorsement, the Palin endorsement, was worth its weight in gold in a primary.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure I'd call Palin in now that she's running against Terry Reid.
Right.
I mean, that endorsement has served its purpose. She won the primary. In the general election, I don't think I'm sure you're right. I would view Sarah Palin as being 52% negative, you know, with the population as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was running in a hotly contested Republican primary, and if I was trying to gin up the conservative base, she'd be the first person I'd go to.
Okay.
Yeah. You said, okay, we're in agreement? We're
no,
I'm this morning in agreement, John. Arnold?
I'm in agreement that that'd be the first person you'd go to.
But Carol, it's interesting. You know, and we've talked about this so many times on the show. Endorsements, they can be very positive, or they can have a negative connotation as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I look at. I'll give T. Hart and Moran both a C on two of their endorsements. I'm not a big fan of Karl Rove. So that's a negative for T. Hart, but I'm sure not a big fan of John McCain either, and that's a negative for Moran.
Right.
But being, you know, a right-of-center conservative, you know, it really wasn't, I think a real plus, you know, was the Palin and Hannity endorsement in the primary. And the general, John, the Democrats, you just don't have that known name candidate that's running in the general. Whoever wins this primary, in all probability, they're going to be the next United States Senator. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, it's pretty tough with the name recognition that both Tiahrt and Moran have for a Democrat to pop up at the last minute and try to become known, well enough known to capture somebody's votes.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty hard.
Carol, are you involved in any other race? Is this the biggie?
Yeah, this is a big one for me. So this is pretty much where we spend our time. We support Todd. There's some local that we're involved in, but not as big as this one.
Yeah, yeah. The defining issue, again, you think is going to be?
I think it's life and taxes.
Okay. Taxes, obviously, big. You know, and just again, shoring up the conservative base on the life issue.
Yes, and hoping also we can do something with the disaster of health care that we now are been graciously inundated with.
Well, Carol Holthaus, we have every intention of getting Todd Tiahrt back on the show between now and primary election day.
And, you know, if anybody does want to come, they're certainly welcome to give me a call. I'd happy to send him out an invitation if they'd like to meet him, find out what he's about. It's a very casual thing that we're having at our house for those that want to, you know, don't know and want to inquire. They're absolutely welcome to come.
And folks, again, Carol Holthaus, your phone number is?
785-845-9829. Or they can reach me on email, which is carol.holthaus, H-O-L-T-H-A-U-S. @cox.net.
Okay, and that's 845-9829, and your reception's going to be a week from Saturday from 1 to 3.
Correct.
And then following that, and folks, this would give you an excellent opportunity to meet Congressman Tiahrt in a very, very casual setting, an intimate setting, the whole nine yards, where you can really get to know the congressman, and you'll have a chance to ask him about issues that are important to you. And then on a larger stage, later that afternoon, I believe that's when the Shawnee County Republicans are having their Meet the Candidate Forum, I believe.
Yeah, that's at 6 o'clock. I don't know if I can pull you up and tell you where it's at really quick.
It's going to be at the Crestview Shelter House,
yeah,
I believe, yeah. Yeah, just right east of Shunga and Fairlawn. But Carol, again, the phone number 845-9829. Folks, if you have any interest in attending this event, it's sponsored by Carol Holthaus and her husband. You can give her a call, and she can fill you in on the details.
Great.
Carol, thank you so much for coming on.
I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you, John. You guys have a great day.
Thank you very much. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Carol Holthaus and Congressman Todd Tiahrt supporter, 845-9829. So, might be a fun event to attend. Let's take a break. When we return, John Arnold's here. I think Jim Ogle's coming in. And 10 o'clock, we've got Dave Jackson's not going to be here, but somebody is. Lynn Holquist, I think, from Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center to answer your gardening questions. So you don't want to miss it.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org. a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Eyewear Unique is a fun, upscale optical shop located in Topeka. They may be in mid-America, but their frame selection is world-class. The expert staff will help you into your first really awesome pair of high-quality eyewear. Their designer frame selection will hold its own against the finest shops in New York or L.A. Eyewear Unique is not just another optical shop. They are truly new and different. They are not interested in selling you a pair of glasses. They are interested in selling you eyeglasses for the rest of your life. Your face is a work of art, and it deserves a great frame. Eyewear Unique offers top-of-the-line designer frames with names like Etnia, Barcelona, Lunar, Robert Mark, LA Eyeworks, Bevel Specs, Freudenhaus, Oliver Peoples, Ray-Ban, and Oakley, just to name a few. The frames run from stylish and affordable $90 eyewear to the extraordinary Fossa Foss line, located at 4008 Southwest Huntoon Street in Topeka, or visit them on the web at eyewearuniquetopeka.com.
Take your face to the next level.
Eyewear Unique. Eyewear for life.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okie dokie, we're back. John Bullfrogs, my home away from home, the best sports bar you're going to find anywhere, folks. 55, count them, 55 TVs. If it's a sporting event, you know, you can be a Spokane Slasher fan, for that matter. And if you want to watch Spokane on an indoor football game, they televise half of them, I think, you can let Bullfrogs know. Jeremiah Bullfrogs, the 29th and Wanamaker, they can pull that game in for you via satellite TV. I mean, they've got 55 TVs in there, folks, so if it's a televised sporting event anywhere, if it's on satellite TV, you can watch that event at Jeremiah Bullfrog's 29th and Wanamaker. Check it out. It's a great place to meet your friends for a beer, great food, the whole nine yards. And in the most recent Best of Topeka contest, once again, was voted the best sports bar to be found anywhere in Northeast Kansas. Well, good morning, John Arnold.
Good morning, Jim.
Good to have you back with us.
Thank you very much.
You're here each and every Friday. You brought a guest with you this
morning. I did. My son, Jay.
Good morning, Jim.
Jay, good to have you with us. I'm going to have you pull your mic in, and John, you too.
Okay.
Just as close as you can get it. Okay.
Right.
Jay, you're visiting?
I'm visiting from Seattle, Jim.
Seattle. Now, did you grow up here in Topeka, or did you grow up in Seattle?
I grew up in Colorado. Dad, as a city manager, moved around a lot and spent the bulk of school years and went to college in Colorado. But given family here, we were out at least once a year, and bring the grandkids out about every year or so.
Why Seattle? You got something against sunshine? Or?
Jim, I'm a technology guy, and out of college, I had an opportunity to go to Microsoft, and love the area. It had all the Seattle's got all the mountain things that I loved in Colorado, plus water as well.
Yeah, and mild winters.
Yeah, mild. I missed the snow.
We ended up
having. Yeah, we ended up having to. The best skiing is in Vancouver, BC, where the Olympics were.
Yeah, I'd love to send you some snow. Lord, no, I don't think that's one of the things I would miss. But Seattle, the economy is rolling merrily along.
It's still struggling in commercial real estate. The downtown area and several downtowns have built a lot and have vacancy rates above 25%. But there also is some very strong, stable industries, software, aviation, biotech. While they have had some layoffs. Microsoft has laid off over 5,000 people in the last year. It still remains a very stable employer, and that has buffered things a lot. But from folks that I know that are in real estate, construction, realty, those areas, commercial real estate, are still very much hurting out there.
Well, Jay, I would think Seattle would have to have one of the highest literacy rates, one of the highest education rankings in the country for major cities because of Microsoft. You know, I again, when I'm looking at a high degree of education, I'm thinking San Jose, California. I'm thinking Seattle, Washington.
I'm sure that that's the case. There was a conference recently, and somebody had advocated saying, hey, everybody should make sure that they're carrying around books to illustrate as you're walking around the street or on the bus that Seattle is Bookburg. The fun thing is, as I am riding the bus to work today, is you actually end up seeing regular people with iPads and Kindles and these electronic book readers where you actually read about them. You have somebody like me that's into technology that knows about them, but to actually see them out in the wild where people, regular people are using them, you see that a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It would have to be just a fascinating environment because, you know, you're working with very, very creative people on a daily basis. You know, if you're working for Microsoft, you're always looking for that new technology, you know, that new innovation that
yes.
is going to keep Microsoft on top.
Yes, so. And a lot of spin-offs from Microsoft there, folks like Real Networks and other companies like Amazon are out there where there's just a lot of innovation going on.
And I would imagine a lot of... And we're moving into Seattle. Probably not a lot of natives Washingtonians working for Microsoft, are they? I would think they're probably pulling the best and the brightest in from
yes.
all over the country.
They're bringing lots of people in over the country and part of the internationally as well.
Yeah.
Part of the challenge with yeah. dealing with that growth is people recognizing that the metro area around Seattle is going to grow in the next 20 years by 1.8 million new people and 1.2 million new jobs. And part of the challenges in what's happening around there is saying, how do you grow another downtown Seattle in the next 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that the area is planning for.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of the few, well, maybe not a growth area. There's no growth areas in America anymore. But on a relative scale, Seattle is doing very, very well.
Doing better than
the rest
than
of the country, which
the country for sure.
Yeah, the rest
Although
of the country
the
would love to be doing as well.
Struggles still continue. We've got our state budget deficit. We'll have the third year of a multi-billion-dollar deficit coming in next year, and some interesting initiatives on the ballot to try to figure out different approaches for dealing with that.
Now, Jay Arnold, your most recent governor race—that's where the loser was screaming foul, correct?
So,
voter fraud, allegations, the whole nine yards. And that was a race that was determined by less than 1,000 votes?
So in...
Just going back in my memory bank and
right.
trying to pull all of this out.
8 years ago, Jim, Dino Rossi was a Republican that ran against Christine Gregoire in an open gubernatorial seat. And this race went to two recounts and then went to court. And in the end, after the two recounts... Governor Gregoire won by 234 votes.
Wow.
Dino Rossi ran again against wow. Gregoire 4 years later and lost by a much greater margin. It was
So the contested race was 8 years ago.
The contested race
Good
for
night.
8 years ago. So what's
it seems
happening?
Like yesterday.
Yeah. What's wow. happening now is Dino Rossi is running against Patty Murray, our incumbent Democratic state senator. And it's marked as one of the competitive Senate races.
Yeah, you said state senator, but she's U.S. senator from the state of Washington.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's what.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the recent polling, Patty Murray had a fairly comfortable lead 90 days ago, but now that race is really tightening up, where it's now slightly leaning Democratic. So yeah. she's
the latest poll I had it within 5 points.
Yeah, yeah. So she's an incumbent that could be in trouble, especially, you know, if the economy goes in the dumpster, which I don't know what the Dow's doing today. We'll check it out here in a minute. But
radio said it was modestly up when it opened this morning, but we haven't. Jay brought his computer, but there's no Wi-Fi here, so we can't connect up to find out unless we could use yours.
I don't know how to do that. We can.
He does.
We can
check. Break.
Well, Jay, it's good to have you with us. Are you involved politically? in the state of Washington?
My background is technology, but I am involved in consulting for different nonprofits and political campaigns, helping them with their outreach and some of the tools that are out there to help organize people online and get them involved.
Well, the Dow, by the way, John Arnold, modestly down.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it's down 15 as we speak. NASDAQ's down 4. S&P's down 5. Let's take a look at gold. I can't imagine gold going any lower than what it did yesterday. Well, it's up a little. Back up over 1,200. It's at 1,201. Silver is in the dumpster. It's at 1,771.
So. What happened to gold yesterday?
Oh, it took a dive.
Did it?
Down 48 bucks. Yeah, it really, really took a nosedive.
Well, should have predicted that because I invested a little bit in it last week. I should have told you, Jim, get out. I'm getting in.
That's usually the way it happens for me. Jim.Cates at cgonline.com if you've got a question or a comment. And an email just came in from Dwight. Good morning, Dwight. Dwight Callahan, great insurance agent at 12th in Kansas. And Dwight says, Jim, has the best of Topeka been published by the paper yet? Since I was on vacation for a week, I was curious if I missed it. Nope, you haven't missed it. It's coming out next Sunday, I believe, Dwight. You were coming in clear for a while Monday in the Cabo area of Mexico, then my laptop overheated, so I missed the last part of the show. Well, the good news is, Dwight, we've got it on podcast. Is that what it's called? I don't know any
That's
of these
it,
terms, huh? I reference it as reruns. We've got it as reruns.
Archives. Your archives.
Archives. Yeah, that'll work. That'll work.
As of what, noon every day? Is that when they put them up?
Yeah, around noon. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, if somebody calls and wants to check out the day show, I always tell them check it out around 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Then you're safe.
Okay.
But normally around noon, shows are up and running and ready to go.
How long do they stay up there, Jim? Do you have any idea?
Forever, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Forever. John, the top stories of the week. Let's talk about your top story.
Well, the top story.
Jay, feel free to jump in.
Kagan's hearing, and of course, the McChrystal story still is out there.
Well, let's talk. Which one? Which one do you want to go with?
I think Kagan's probably more topical because she's newer, more fresh, that whole hearing issue. Of course, Senator Byrd's
out. She's fresh. Let's stay with one. Which one? You want to stay with Kagan?
Sure.
Or?
Kagan's fine.
All right.
Kagan's fine.
Okay. Well, she's fresh because she has no track record.
It's a fresh story is kind of what I meant more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, her track record is a year as the chief advocate, the Solicitor General for the United States. That's kind of important. They refer to her often as the 10th Justice of the Supreme Court because she's so actively involved in the cases before it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought she did a good job in the hearing, answered questions, probably as good as you can answer a question that where they're trying to trip them up, you know. I mean, both the Republicans are trying to trip her up and the Democrats are trying to trip up the Republicans, and so it's quite a little circus that they run.
Well, you know, when we've got a Democrat majority, and it would work the same way, you know, if we had a Republican president and a Republican majority, you know, for Kagan not to get the nomination, she's going to have to be found in a hot tub with a goat. Anything less than that, she's going to be our next Supreme Court justice.
I think so.
Yeah.
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 I think that's pretty well accepted, actually, by the Republicans as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kagan, you know, there are some right-of-center Republicans that are saying she could be a sleeper.
Oh, yeah.
This one might not be quite as liberal as Obama perceives her to be. I mean, this could be the sleeper. It normally works the other way, it seems. Because I know Reagan, of course, his pick was Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Thought he was picking a right-of-center justice. Well, didn't turn out to be.
She turned out to be an independent person.
Yeah.
And that's good. And I think one of the things that Kagan said that I really liked was that there really should be no politicization, politics involved in the Supreme Court.
So is she Jewish or Catholic? Got to be one of the two.
She said she's Jewish.
Jewish. Well, it has to be.
One of
we don't appoint Protestants anymore to the Supreme Court. Nine people, none of which are Protestant.
Yeah, yeah. And none of which have gone to any school except Harvard or Yale.
Harvard or Yale. That's it.
Which drives me crazy. I think, you know, the whole rest of the state, I mean, Colorado, where Jay went to school, had Whizzer White, appointed by JFK in the early 60s. But and then Sandra Day O'Connor from Arizona and Stanford. But when was the last anybody that wasn't from the East? You know,
there might have been Whizzer White. I don't know.
Well,
there had to have
Sandra Day O'Connor.
Or Sandra Day O'Connor, of course, yeah.
But, you know, what's the matter with the University of Chicago?
Fort Hays State.
Well, that's right. Yeah. We need to have some Westerners in there, I think. Westerners, Midwesterners, somebody besides the East Coast. Three women are all New Yorkers, I believe, different parts of New York, and it's diverse, but still, that's, you kind of wonder about that, don't you? Do they have any perspective about what it's like out in the West?
Yeah. Well, the West is everything west of the Hudson River, you know, if you're from New York City. Yeah, you're in the West. You're in the Midwest if you go to Philadelphia, and you're in the true West if you're in Pittsburgh. That's the perspective of a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah, I think this is pretty much a done deal, though. I just can't imagine, you know, the confirmation not going Kagan's way. So.
Yeah. She, in fact, she was asked. You asked the question of what's her religion. One of the senators, South Carolina, what's his name, was asking her something. And
Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham. Thank you. He said something about, where were you on Christmas Day? And she said, like most other Jews, in a Chinese restaurant.
That's one of the things, Jim, that I found interesting watching some of the hearings while I've been here, is that she really did display a sense of humor. She seems like a very genuine person, not necessarily what you would expect for you know, someone who is dean of Harvard Law School.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
I think she disarmed them a lot, the Republicans as well, by her humor and the way she answered some of the questions.
Let's go back to the emails. This one's from Terrence. Good morning, Terrence. It says, Jim, I don't know whether you've heard about this. Governor Schwarzenegger puts 200,000 workers on a $7.25 per hour wage. Governor blames California legislature for failure to pass a state budget.
Are those state employees?
Yeah, 200,000.
Are they state employees put on $7 an hour?
Would have to be if Schwarzenegger put them on.
Yeah,
$7.25 per hour.
But that's still
200,000.
That's a lot of people, but California employees probably several million if you talk about the public schools and city and county and state government.
Well, Kansas, we have 42,000 state employees now.
Is that right?
I think it's 42,000. Yeah. So 200,000, you know, wouldn't be out of line, but $7.25 an hour living in California?
Forget it. You might as well make them work for free.
You're going to sleep in the car.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, an email from Myron. He was having audio problems earlier this morning, but apparently, Myron, you've got all that taken care of. All right. Very good. And Myron emailed us about the latest 912 project. It appears there's a lot of good things going on. What are those good things? Okay, I don't get the 912 project's newsletter, so I don't know what the good things are that's going on.
What are the I don't know the 912 project.
912 project, Glenn Beck, basically. Got the 912 project up and running.
Well, no wonder I don't know about it.
I'm sure you're not on their mailing list. July the 13th, it looks like we've got a rally. Sheriff Joe Arpaio is coming in to support Kris Kobach's candidacy for Secretary of State. That should be interesting. Well, I'll try to get Sheriff Arpaio back on the show. He was the guest on the show 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
When we were in Des Moines. Yeah, we were up prior to the Iowa caucuses, and I had Sheriff Arpaio on the show. He's actually from Massachusetts originally.
Yeah.
And he was in Iowa campaigning for Mitt Romney. So I predict Mitt Romney is going to be our party's nominee in 2012. I'm not excited about that, but I think all signs point to the fact that he's really gearing it up. Politically, he's doing everything right. He looks presidential.
He does.
Yep. Yeah. Speaks well. Very articulate. And former governor of Massachusetts, so he's going to have, you know, that centrist, left-of-center Republican appeal, crossover appeal, if you will.
He has the problem in that his Massachusetts health care program apparently parallels the Obama, what's called the Obamacare, and he's tried to distance himself from the Obamacare while it's pretty tough, and so given his support for the Massachusetts model.
Well, politically, so, that's going to be pretty easy to defend if you're Mitt Romney. Because the Massachusetts legislature is 90-10, or 85-15. 85% Democrat, 15% Republicans. So the Democrats truly have a veto-proof legislature.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's going to be easy to deflect that and say, hey, blame it on those people. I didn't have anything to do with it. So kind of a win-win, you know, if you've got the right spin master. You know, if you're a minority governor, if your party is the minority party. Because then you can take credit for the good things and the bad things, just deflect them off on, you know, those crazy legislators over there and that other party, which is what he can do in Massachusetts. The thing that concerns me about Mitt Romney, I'm not sure the guy truly has a political philosophy. You know, I kind of look at Romney as the finger in the air. Whichever way the wind's blowing, I think that's the way I'm going today. If you look at where Mitt Romney stood when he ran for governor of Massachusetts on some of the key issues and where he stands today, we're talking about two different people. He's become much more conservative now that he's no longer governor of Massachusetts.
Well, yeah.
But it concerns me, the thing that has always puzzled me, how does a conservative Mormon Republican win statewide election in Massachusetts? There are zero members of Congress from Massachusetts, with the sole exception of Scott Brown, Senator Brown.
Right.
Sitting in the halls of Congress, zero, nada. They've got 10 members of Congress, all of which are Democrats. 9 of the 10 are assured of their reelection this year. 1 out of 10 possibly could go Republican. But how does a conservative Republican Mormon win?
Well, you know,
how do you do that?
How he did it, I don't know, but it raises the question, how'd Scott Brown win also? And that's why he's such an anomaly that everybody identifies as the senator from, the Republican senator from Massachusetts. But, you know, Jim, a finger in the air thing, I think with all the polling that goes on, the politicians do it, the news media do it, the independent nonprofits do it. So you get all kinds of information out there about what people think, and it's pretty hard to run for any position, any elected position, without paying some attention to public opinion, you know, and it changes. Public opinion changes. I mean, my goodness, the Tea Party stuff has changed a whole lot of thinking about what's a conservative Republican, I think, thrown up much further to the right. Now, after this election in November, will the Tea Party people do well?
You say the Tea Party movement's thrown the Republican Party much farther to the right. Why would you say that?
Well, it just seems like it has. Now, do I have reasons for that? I'm not so sure I do, except that they seem to be...
The Tea Partiers only have two issues.
Taxes and regulation, smaller government.
And, well, constitutionality, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
Tea Party's not involved in any social issue. You know, looking at the abortion issue, which is the engine that's been driving the train for years in the Republican Party.
That's true.
Tea Party doesn't have a dog in that hunt at all. I mean, this is all about taxation. This is all about government spending.
Jim, and one of the things that's interesting that mixes it up is the Tea Party has been also very big at saying, you know, what about the deficits? And the Republican line has really been, since Reagan, that deficits don't matter. And then this is really a real different change.
It's one of the things that Cheney said over and over again. Reagan proved that deficits don't matter, but finally we realized they do matter. There was an issue, Jim, just this week, I believe that I read a little bit about, that said the Tea Party people have no foreign policy issues.
I would agree, because that's
because
not their issue. That's
like you're saying, they have two issues only.
Yeah, and that's it. So, you know, as far as driving the party to the right, I don't view that the Tea Party is driving the Republican Party to the right, because the Republican Party supposedly has always stood for responsible government spending. And that, I think if you were to talk to your rank-and-file Tea Party activist, that's the reason they're attending these Tea Party rallies. That's the reason they're involved in the movement.
Okay.
They see government as just wildly out of control when it comes to government spending.
Well, and that, I always thought of Republicans as being fiscally responsible, too, until we got into the Reagan era when deficits didn't matter and we ran up horrendous debt during that time and started doing it over and over again and have continued. And I don't know why. I guess the Republicans, I think maybe Cheney defined it. Deficits don't matter. Reagan proved it. And it's unfortunate because that took away the main thing that was, I always thought, buttressing the Republican Party, fiscal responsibility.
Well, I'll give the Democrats credit. By the way, John Arnold is here, as he is each and every Friday, along with his son, Jay Arnold. Jay, good to have you with us. You know, and I'll give the Democrats credit because I view the Democrats more honest in a lot of respects than Republicans when you're out campaigning for office, because I think all of us recognize the fact that most rank-and-file Democrats thinks that government can do it better. Government truly has a role to perform, and if government can do it better in so many cases. Your rank-and-file Republican voter, I don't think, feels that way. They are more of the private sector. Let's turn this over to the private sector. But having said that, the Democrats, I think when you vote Democrat, you know you're probably voting for higher government spending. The Republicans, the perception is that you're voting for a restraint on government spending, reduced government spending possibly.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Democrats are tax and spend. Republicans reduce your taxes, but they're spending every bit as much money as the Democrats are. So it's disingenuous, the Republican position. You know, we're all for pushing tax reductions, but we're still spending as much, which is fiscally irresponsible. We saw that under the Bush administration.
David Stockman, who was budget director under Reagan from 80 to 86, wrote a book published in 86 called The Triumph of Politics. In it, he went down, detailed all of the votes, Jim, basically showed, and he concluded this, that the Republican majorities voted in favor of the great welfare state that we have today. From 56 on, when Social Security and Medicare and on and on and on, the great welfare state was supported by Republican majorities all the way along the line. And the greatest growth in that was in the Nixon-Ford era, in the, what's that, 68 to 76.
Six.
Mm-hmm. And he went on from there, you know, and we've continued to add to it. The Medicare program, Medicare drug program, put in place by George W. Bush and his administration without funding, contributed, and there's a nice a letter to the editor within the past couple of days where somebody, and I forget his name, I cut the article out, but I don't remember the writer's name. He really detailed a lot of the fiscal stuff that's occurred the past 30 years. And it was good.
Let's go back to our emails. This one's from Ken. And it says, Jim, TV has shown quite a few right-to-life signs at tea parties where many of the attendees are wearing sidearms. Second Amendment is very much an issue with them. And, Ken, I would agree with you. I think the Second Amendment is possibly a big issue with your tea partiers because it gets into the constitutionality issue as well. I've been to two Tea Party rallies here in Shawnee County, one of which close to 2,000 people attended, huge crowd. The other one, a much smaller crowd. I didn't see any sign of any socially conservative issue. I just didn't see that. Mm. And, Ken, I'm sure you're right on the national scene. You're probably seeing a few of those signs, but I don't think the rank-and-file Tea Party attendee is out there to promote social conservatism. It's just not part of that agenda. And we've had Deb Lucia that heads up the 912 Project in Topeka on this show on several occasions. And Deb has never brought up a socially conservative issue. It's always, you know, the deficit,
right,
spending, the taxation issue, the whole nine yards. So I know. Let's take a break, and if there's other stories to talk about, we'll be talking about them. One, we can talk about the Gulf oil spill. We might be talking about this story this time next year.
Yeah, what has it been, 80 days?
Yep, and no end in sight. Okay, folks, stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back. We were talking about Sharon Angle off the air.
Right.
John Arnold and Jay Arnold, they're with me, and we're talking about the top stories of the week. And we were talking about the Nevada primary, which showed in Nevada, Jay, the Tea Party, I think their strength in Nevada, much, much, much stronger than it is in Kansas.
Yeah, one of the things that was interesting in talking about the strength of the Tea Party is that when Sharon Angle won that primary, she won against a very credentialed Republican. Sue Loudon was a former chair of the state party in Nevada, was a former state legislator, and had a lot of establishment support. What do you think about the impact of the Tea Party when they have won over establishment Republicans in places like Arizona? It also happened in Utah with Bob Bennett, a sitting senator, defeated in a primary.
You know, all politics is local, as the old saying goes, and Loudon tripped over her tongue on several occasions in Nevada. And actually, you know, it was a five-way primary on paper. In reality, it boiled down to a three-way primary. You had Sue Loudon. She was the glamour girl, the former Miss New Jersey, the TV anchor from Vegas. She was the poster girl. And then you had the celebrity in the race. You had Danny Tarkanian, whose father, of course, was Jerry Tarkanian, the UNLV coach. So he was the celebrity in the race. And you had Sharon Angle. Sharon was a legislator, the former minority whip of the Republican Party when she was in the legislature, and she represented Reno, which is not a huge voting bloc in Nevada. You know, I think 75% of the vote in Nevada now comes out of Clark County. I believe it's 75%.
Really?
So if you're going to win an election in Nevada, you got to carry Clark County. And Nevada only has 17 counties. You know, it's roughly the same size as Kansas, a little larger. And they only
land,
have...
Land area. What's the population of Nevada?
A little over two.
A little over two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And... But the population, obviously, is all centered in and around Las Vegas. I used to have Sharon on the show to compare what was going on in Nevada politics, comparing that to Kansas.
Right.
And you would think Kansas, Nevada, apples, oranges, issues were the same. And they were going through basically the same struggles with the same issues that we were going through in Kansas. And it was just, it was interesting having Sharon on during the legislative session in Nevada, talking about what was coming up on the House floor in Nevada that day. Well, the same thing was being discussed in Kansas. So,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah, it really was.
You wouldn't think that Nevada and Kansas would have much in common in terms of political issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's a surprise, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the issue everywhere, though, education.
And funding it.
Funding it. That's a biggie. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's going to be the race to watch with Sharon Angle against Harry Reid, and there's going to be a lot of national money in it now that they're through the primary.
Pull your mic a little closer, and if you would, Jay, okay? Yeah, that's better.
So we have a lot of national money will end up in that race, and it'll be one to watch in November.
Yeah, we could be looking at a $75 to $80 million race in a state that has 2 million people. I mean, this is going to be potentially huge, huge, the money that's going to be spent in Nevada to elect a United States senator.
Yeah. It's and then you got Arizona with McCain versus Hayworth.
J.D. Hayworth, and that's an example. We were visiting folks off the air. The power of the Tea Party movement, and we certainly have seen it in some states. I know, Jay Arnold, you were talking about Utah. While we were on break, and we saw an incumbent congressman defeated in a primary in Utah because it was the Tea Party activist that basically tossed him out in favor of somebody that's going to be a little more fiscally conservative, possibly. But in Nevada, you would think if the Tea Party really was going to rear its head and demonstrate its strength, it would be, Arizona. You would think Arizona would be this is going to be the poster state. J.D. Hayworth is trailing in the polls by 15 points.
Is McCain that far back?
Yeah. Yeah, McCain has a pretty significant lead in Arizona. And you would think this would be the state, the defining state, for the Tea Party.
Potentially, potentially not. One thing that's interesting about that race is Sarah Palin, of course, has endorsed John McCain. If things had turned the other way, then I think it would be a very different race, but I don't see how she could have done that.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
You know, Sarah Palin.
That would have been
paybacks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because John McCain is the one that propelled Sarah Palin into this celebrity spotlight, if you will. And it was payback time.
Took her out of Wasilla.
Yes, indeed. Now, you're right. If it wasn't for the Palin endorsement, you know, we might be possibly looking at a neck and neck race. I guess early on, I was hoping that most voters would perceive Palin's endorsement as being just that, a payback.
Yeah.
And but apparently, they're taking it a little more serious. It goes back to the power of her endorsement if you're running in a Republican primary. Well, I'd want it. But come general election time, John Arnold, you're right. Possibly that positive can turn into a negative.
Yeah, exactly. But who knows? We'll have to see. Maybe the Tea Party movement fizzles out this year after November and goes away. But there's a strong anti-incumbent feeling out there. You see that frequently sent around on the Internet by emails and things, chain emails people are sending. They talk about the 28th Amendment that says we need to put into the Constitution, which basically says Congress shall pass no law that doesn't apply to them. And which is not a bad idea, I think. And I'm not, but I think sometimes these emails used a little too much hyperbole and exaggerate the issues to the point of which they lose some credibility with me. But the idea of throwing everybody out and starting over is not a bad idea.
Well, and we saw this in the last presidential run. You know, George W.
Yeah.
Bush, prior to the election, just the Dow going into the dumpster. And you did have that, throw the bums out on the Republican side of the ledger because of Bush mismanaging this country for 8 years.
Yep.
But now we're seeing the same thing out of Obama. And in 2010, come November of 2010, that pendulum is going to swing back the other way. I just hope the Republicans don't screw it up this time. But we had our chance back in the mid-90s when we had the Republican Revolution, and that was due, in my opinion, to two people. Newt Gingrich with his contract with America.
94, yep.
Yep, and Rush Limbaugh, hotter than hot, in 94. The combination of those two, the Republicans took control of Congress. And this was during the Clinton administration, and there was a 4 to 6 year period where Republicans really acted like Republicans when they said, hey, if you elect me, I'm going to hold the line on spending. And for a brief period of time, they actually did that. But then the Republicans became the entrenched party in power.
Yeah.
And it was twiddly-dee, twiddly-done. Republican, Democrat, made no difference. Causes were different, but the end result as far as spending the same. 295-1115, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. K.
Good morning.
How are you this fine morning?
Well, who is this? I am doing well.
This is somebody here from your distant past, Jim.
Jim Foster in Osage County.
Yeah.
Now it's coming to me. How are you doing, Jim?
Well, I got to listen to Obama give his speech about immigration, and it, he even sounded like he was trying to convince himself.
Do you really view Obama as being any worse than George W. Bush was on that issue? How could you be any worse than Bush?
Well, he's showing us how.
I don't know, Jim. I'm certainly no Obama fan. You're not going to hear me sticking up for Obama. But in reality, I don't see that he is any worse on this issue than George W. Bush. You remember the Bush years, huh?
But you're right. You're right. It was open the gate and let them all in. But as much as we got going on with the local and national issues, we've got our own local issues going on that's going to change the world. There's a deal down here going on in Osage County where they're trying to go to county unit, and I'm still trying to get anybody to set up and debate me on the facts. And all we've got is hope and change, and how well is this hope and change working out for you right now?
Now, what's the issue in Osage County, Jim Foster?
Well, Osage County, they're trying to move us from township to county unit, where the county controls everything. And with that, they're trying to say that they can save so much money, and, well, there's some things that if you do the planning, maybe. But you've got to do the planning first, and it's got to be done by those who actually do the work, those that actually have some knowledge about it, not just somebody that reads the theory. The work's easy to accomplish if you're not the one that has to do it. Some simple facts. The county has 168 miles of gravel road that they maintain. They have four machines to maintain it with. That's one for 42. I, in my township, have one motor grader for 72. Who's already doing more for less?
Well, it's interesting what Jim is talking about there because, as we were talking about before, the Tea Party movement, there's a lot of movement out there that says we want smaller government, we want less government, fewer governmental units. And as we know, we have 105 counties and over 1,400 townships in the state of Kansas. And so, the county has four motor graders in Osage County now, but the townships have, how many? I don't know.
The townships have 16.
There you go. So if you do away with the townships, then maybe the county gets by with only having 12 instead of 20 graders in the whole county. And maybe they can do it with fewer people and cheaper and certainly less supervision. That's the whole thing about consolidation.
Now, there again you go. What happens to us is this last time on this last snow, we had 19 motor graders running. We had, I think, 7 dump trucks with blades. We had, I lost count of how many dozers, farm tractors, and everything else trying to keep the snow open, and we couldn't do it. So if you're going to try to do the work that's needed to keep the thing open for the public, we couldn't do it with all the machines we had. How are we going to do it with half as many?
Well, I don't know. I don't know exactly that you'd do it with half as many or however many you would need. But certainly with how many townships in Osage County?
There's 16.
16 townships?
16 townships.
There's an awful lot of supervision there that for one county. What's the population of Osage County? 75,000?
I really don't have that figure on my head.
No?
On the top of my head. But yeah, there's 16 townships. The county is spending some $800,000 on their 168 mile of gravel.
Yeah.
We're only spending $1.4 million on the other 800. So we're doing mile for mile, we're doing a whole lot cheaper than what the county is doing. So when you're trying to take away supervision, you also take away the ability to be able to call that man and say, I've got a problem, come fix it, and we do.
Now, Jim Foster, where exactly are you on this issue today? What's in the pipeline as far as potential changes?
What's in the pipeline for potential changes? Basically, what that they are doing is the county has set back and said, well, if you're satisfied with your township, you won't. If you're not, you'll vote for the county unit. The county will not come out with their own plan to say this is what we're going to do.
Right, now, when you say you're voting for the county unit, are we talking about consolidation of townships? What are we talking about when you say county unit?
County unit does away with the township.
Completely.
Almost completely. But it doesn't stop the elected officials. It doesn't stop all the rest of the other stuff. There's several other things that it doesn't do that they're promoting it does.
Now, you've got 3 commissioners in Osage County, correct?
Correct.
Okay, 3 county commissioners. So then you would have a 3-person governing body for Osage County. No townships.
Right.
All of that would now come under the Osage County umbrella, managed by 3 county commissioners, all of which now are part-time, correct?
They are part-time, but here's the
Will this roll into a full-time job for these 3 individuals if, in fact, we're doing away with our 16 townships?
That's not what they're planning on. They're planning on doing it with the same supervision they have. They're planning it on doing it with the same even road supervision they have, which has no engineer in our county. We only hire an engineer for a project. So part of our problem has been that the county has an engineer, but it's also the township's engineer. So all these things they talk about standards, the county government should have been doing it years ago and saying that this needs to be done or you need to do it this way.
Jim, I want to have John Arnold jump in here in a minute, but is this an issue that's going to be on the ballot?
They moved it up to, and it's an issue on the ballot in the primary.
In the primary?
We don't even have till the general election. We have till the primary to do it. Which means that we've not only got to educate the voters on what the issue is, we've got to educate the voters that even if you're not affiliated with the party, you still can come vote the issue. So it is a real uphill battle to get informed voters. And you know how well we have talked about informed voters being a necessity.
It's a really interesting question, both Jims, because you're talking about 16 townships. I assume that each has a township clerk. Each has some other township elected officers, and there's some money going into 3 township officers in addition to the clerk, and money goes to pay all those, even though it's a small amount of money, but it's multiplied 16 times. And then you say, okay, it's a small enough county, you can manage it with the 3 part-time commissioners. Maybe you want to have a county administrator or county manager or something to help coordinate everything during the transition. But, you know, it really comes back to what we said earlier, Jim Cates, about all politics is local. We say we want smaller government, but when it comes to our backyard and our motor grader, by God, we want to make sure we can call this guy up and say, come grade my gravel.
All right, but here you talk about reducing these other people.
Yeah.
But do you realize when that you take away this board, now, since our county doesn't have an engineer, that everything that you have paid all those board members would not pay for the engineer and his staff that you need to hire.
Jim, I'll tell you what we'll do, my friend. By the way, where does your state representative stand on this issue? Willie Prescott, former Osage County Commissioner.
Well, he's kind of neutral on the idea because he knows that there are some townships that are working excellent and some townships that are not.
Okay. Jim, I'll tell you what we'll do. If you've got somebody withstanding on the other side of this issue, we'll be more than happy to give you a 30-minute airtime. We'll have a 30-minute debate on the issue.
Well, if you can find them, I would glad to be able to do it, but I can't find anybody to stand there to go toe-to-toe, issue by issue, and debate the facts. So if you can find one, you know where you can find me.
Yep. Well, Jim, we just put it out on the air, so if anybody's listening from Osage County that is a member of any official organization that basically is on the other side of the issue, we'll be more than happy to give you 30 minutes of air time. Jim, thanks for the call, my friend.
Thank you for the help.
You bet. Jim Foster.
Jim Cates, this is a really good example. I didn't realize this was going on in Osage County. But we need to have this kind of discussion all over the state. As you know from my past discussions about the Kansas Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, mm-hmm. we have studied the consolidation issue of counties and of townships and eliminating them, and it's a big deal for the state. There's a whole lot of money involved that's going for basically what I would consider duplication of services. Now, do you want to have a full, you know, government to be our full employment entity, and because we'll keep these clerks and township people employed, give them a little money and so on, or do you want to have something like efficiency in doing? I mean, all over the country, whether you're in California or Washington State or Kansas, consolidation of governments, consolidation of educational facilities, all of that stuff needs to be looked at.
Sure. But, you know, back when this was an issue.
And if you don't want to pay for it, consolidate. If you do want to make those payments, go ahead.
But, John Arnold, back when this was an issue in Shawnee County, you know, we formed this Consolidation Commission. Five people, all of which highly respected this community.
Yep.
And one of which we had on the show every other week, kind of an update on where we stand on city-county consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
To start with, we started out with 50 taxing entities in Shawnee County. This group met for 6 months. 6 months. Their final plan of action, we were going to reduce the number of taxing entities from 50 down to 49. We eliminated one.
Right.
The city of Topeka is a taxing entity.
Yeah.
That's not consolidation.
Nope.
Consolidation is taking a look at our 12 townships. Consolidation is taking a look at our cemetery boards, our watershed boards, and everything else, and bringing some sanity to this process. Kansas, on a per capita basis, I still think we're either number one or number two in the nation on a per capita basis as far as government entities.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think California, Kansas, California, one way or the other, we're either number one or number two. More taxing entities in this state than there is in New York, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And there is in Florida. There is in virtually every other 48 other states in this country. More taxing entities here. And we called that consolidation of government a few years ago.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder it went down to defeat.
And for folks that are on a cemetery board or something else, how often are those contested elections? People say, oh, I want my representative, but how often is there anything where you have got a choice to be able to change that representation?
Yeah, it's a good question. Not very often, because there isn't a great demand to serve on a cemetery board or, frankly, on a township board. Mm-hmm. I mean, the townships here do primarily roads, some fire, some recreation. There may be other services. I don't know what those are. In Shawnee County, for example, I don't know of anything besides those three.
Pretty much nails it.
And I don't know what's going on in Osage County. Jim only mentioned the motor grading activity on gravel roads, but they may have other things also. Anyway, the consolidation issue is a good issue, and it's going to be with us a while. I mean, you take a look at California. They're having, what do they have, a $20 billion budget deficit? You just read that Schwarzenegger is going to put 200,000 people on a $7.25 an hour wage. And that's probably just threatening the legislature that you better get out and solve this budget problem. Then you got a great governor race going on out there between Jerry Brown and
Meg Whitman. Yeah, yeah.
And Meg Whitman has yet to meet with the press, which I think is funny. She doesn't let him in to see what she's doing and what she's talking about or to answer questions. That won't work for very long, I don't think, in California. But, you know, there are 55 counties in California. We have 105.
Yeah, I'm just looking at these 105
counties. They
have 10
times the number of people we have.
And I don't have the population figures in front of me, but Logan County, I believe, is one county to where the total population of Logan County is less than 4,000, I believe.
Yes.
Wallace County, I think, total population of Wallace, less than 3,000. Greeley, Wichita County, Scott County, Lane County, again, four counties with a population of less than 5,000.
Yeah.
And again, if you've got a county, that means you've got a courthouse. That means this courthouse is filled with county employees in counties that have less than 3,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
Consolidation certainly is an order in this state. And again, looking at, you know, Nevada, which we were talking about earlier, 17 counties. We got 105.
Yeah.
105 counties.
I did a consulting job a few years ago, Jim, in terms of economic development. And I spoke to an economic developer in one of those western counties. And the county had a population of about 5,000, as I recall. And I said, do you ever talk about city and county consolidation to reduce the governments? He said, well, and this was the economic developer I was talking to. He said, well, we have, but on the other hand, if you consolidate, maybe you eliminate a clerk position in one of those two entities. Maybe you'll eliminate two secretaries. And so those three families, say, have to relocate. So they move out. That might cause the closing of another grocery store because those three families make the difference between profit and loss on the grocery store. And he says, so, you know, it's a really difficult thing for survival in this county. And city and county consolidation become very, very difficult to talk about because of that. You don't know what the full impacts, the kind of unintended consequences of taking an action like that and how it ratchets down through things. But it's tough out in the western part of the city. How many counties in Washington, Jay?
I don't recall offhand, but I do know within King County, where I live, we've got the same problem where Metropolitan County of 2.5 million, and there are over 170 independent taxing districts, and the combination has 2,000 different tax assessments depending on overlapping jurisdictions. So this is a problem everywhere.
Wow. You did a thing, what was it, last year, where you did district by district in the state of Washington an analysis of the issues coming before it and the candidates? Pros and cons, what are they for? Was it just the issues?
So I did work at an organization called Fuse Washington, put together a voter guide statewide that had candidates and issues where there are 49 legislative districts within the state.
And you did for each of those?
And for each of those. But you've got very, very similar things here in that you have the urban areas in western Washington, but in eastern Washington it's mainly county government. Mm-hmm. Three-member county commissions, and same challenges of
if you're going to win statewide office in Washington, you've got to carry Seattle, King County. You best be running strong in King County.
There have been people. It's true. You have to do well in the Puget Sound region, but you also have to do well east of the mountains. You mentioned Spokane is an area eastern Washington. It's on the Idaho border. Central Washington as well. So you really do have a split mo. One thing that wasn't mentioned in some of the costs here is also the impact of pensions, where that's something government
Absolutely.
Underfunding of pensions is another thing that consolidation might be able to help with long term, because I know that's a struggle in Washington State. I'm sure it's a struggle in I know it's a struggle in California and must be everywhere, in saying how do you meet the obligations of pensions that you've promised to firefighters, teachers, and other government
Everybody, what? Jim Cates, when Jay, we've talked about this on this program many times, when Jim was first in the legislature, he sponsored a bill to make the legislators not get pensions. He obviously didn't make very many friends or get many committee assignments. And he also
didn't get off to a good start. No,
the bill also did not pass.
It went absolutely nowhere.
But you are right. The pension issue is a big one.
And it's real big in Kansas. It's about to rear its ugly head because I think Kansas, we're in the bottom five. I think adequate funding for our pensions.
I think it was bottom eight, Jim.
Bottom eight.
I believe so. Yeah. I did a blog on that a few weeks ago on how far underwater CAPERS was. And it's like, I don't remember the numbers. It strikes me it was $8 billion under, but that's a small amount compared to, like, Washington and California.
No, on a per capita basis. Small, though.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and our legislators at some point in time in the not-too-distant future better start addressing this issue. Because we're underwater now, as you pointed out in your blog, we're underwater now, and it's not getting any better. The situation's getting worse and worse and worse.
Now, Washington State has addressed it because they have two or three tiers in their public employee pensions, from the old guys to the recently retired to the new hires, something like that, Jay. I don't know exactly how it works. But
yeah, that's correct. But it still doesn't address the problem that there is. The legislators have been able to say, okay, here are the assumptions moving forward, and we're going to assume X percent growth and stuff like that, that with the Great Recession resetting those expectations, you're going to find that things are not funded.
All the assumptions were we'll get 8% a year investment growth, and that's what will make it all work. Well, they haven't got 8% in the past 5 years or any place close to 8%, I believe. And that's true, but it's the same. You know, we have to change our pension systems to, as we do with Social Security, change the ages, change the contribution rates, ages of eligibility, contribution rates to get there, and probably need to change from the old system to a newer system.
Well, like Jay said, you know, we need to come up with this three-tiered system.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you've got a grandfather in. Retirees that are currently drawing money.
Absolutely.
You've got to grandfather in, you know, aging baby boomers.
Somebody
at some point in time, you've got to start, you know, creating this tiered system.
Yeah.
Because back in 1938, when we created Social Security, mortality tables, the average American lived to age 62. Well, actually 62.
Yeah, okay.
And we were furnishing a Social Security benefit at age 65.
Yeah.
So this was a fund designed to grow. No way was this baby going to fail, because more than half of Americans were never going to draw a dime out of it. They were going to be dead long before they were going to have the opportunity to draw a dime from Social Security. Well, that obviously has changed since 1938.
Yes.
I've got two parents that I'm going to be seeing in an hour and a half, both of which are 95 years old. They have been drawing Social Security now for 30-plus years.
Amazing.
Let's go to the phones, 295-1150. Good morning.
Morning, Jim.
Good morning. Hello. Well, Paul, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm still hanging in there.
I thought when we started talking about consolidation, we're going to hear from Paul Degener today. Paul and I agree on a lot of issues.
All right, Paul, this is going to be it.
We've crossed swords. Paul, your turn.
Well, say we consolidated Shawnee and Osage County. How would you like to drive from Topeka to Osage to get a driver's license, to get a car tag, pay your property tax? You know, that's county-county consolidation. Get the city-county consolidation. We all know that if we increase the tax base by consolidating, the government's going to spend all that money anyhow. And then some. So you're not going to save a dime. That's my brief contest on that. Besides, it's not American. It goes along the communist lines to less regionalism.
Well, Paul, this issue's, for right now, it's a dormant issue in Shawnee County. I was visiting with a couple of Capital Journal employees about a week and a half ago on this very issue of consolidation. There is absolutely nothing at any level in this county that's in the pipeline concerning consolidation of government.
Yeah, but it comes up at the state every year.
Yeah.
Even the municipalities pushes this thing, and they use backdoor tactics to try to win the thing. The opponents to consolidation a few years back were completely shut out on the Senate side. They introduced the bill in the morning and had the hearing that afternoon, and guess who was the only one to show up? Bill Moore or Don Moore or whatever his name is from the League of Municipalities.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's backdoor tactics, and I just don't see any benefit. They're going to spend it. The money's there, they're going to spend it, and then some.
Paul, we're having a little phone trouble, but real quick while I've got you on the phone, because you have been and still are a political activist, and you attend a lot of the legislative committee hearings, I know, while the legislature's in session, and so many of us appreciate the fact that you take the time to do all of this. What campaigns are you heavily involved in this year? Who are some of your horses?
I'm supporting Chris Kobach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supporting Dennis Pyle. I haven't decided yet between, names escape me. Running for Brown backseat. P. Hart and Moran.
Yeah.
I haven't made that decision yet. That's about the national. I guess that's about it.
I was really curious as the who you were supporting in the T. Hart Moran race, because Paul, you're certainly known as a right of center conservative in this community, and it looks like T. Hart's starting to pick up somewhat of a head of steam with the conservatives in this race, especially in view of his most recent endorsements. You know, Palin and Sean Hannity coming into Kansas with their endorsements.
Well, I've only met T. Hart once. I've never met Moran. I hope to this next Pachyderm meeting, I think it is. I got to do a little bit more homework on the two, get some of my evaluations out from JBS and some other sources, see how it comes out.
Well, Paul, I appreciate the call, my friend.
You bet.
Stay in touch. Say hi to Shirley for me. It's been a while since I've seen you all.
Okay. Say hi to Nancy.
Paul Degener. He mentioned Dennis Pyle. Senator Pyle's running against Congressman Jenkins, Congresswoman Jenkins.
Yes.
In the primary. And I'm not sure that State Senator Pyle's going to make much of a dent. I don't know.
Just a name recognition that he's got a big uphill road.
Yeah, and Senator Pyle's voting record on, you know, the traditional tax and spend issues, pretty good-looking voting record. The negative side, he was invited to come on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he doesn't do talk radio.
Oh, he doesn't?
He kind of avoids the issues, I think, which concerns me. Because, again, I like Dennis Pyle's. I don't know the guy. Never met him. I like his voting record, you know, on the tax and spend issues, but it always concerns me when somebody dodges the opportunity to appear on the show. I don't know. So
they make the Kate's blacklist.
Yes, they do.
It's a tough environment.
Jay, good to have you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for letting me join you, Jim.
Oh, absolutely. John, blog coming up this week.
Actually, I've been a little busy with the granddaughters visiting, and so I haven't done anything, but I'll do something probably on Sunday.
Okay.
A list of about a half dozen things that I've made notes I want to write about this and so on, and I just haven't done it.
So look for John Arnold's blog coming up the early part of next week.
Yep.
Joining us next Friday, Earl Glenn.
Good old Earl.
Earl will be with us next Friday.
Well, now, one of my concerns, Jim, is where's Jim Ogle? He was scheduled to be here today.
I don't know.
He never misses an opportunity to talk.
No.
And, you know, so I wonder, did he wreck his bike again? You know,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, Dave Jackson called yesterday, and Dave's out of town today.
Okay.
He's on his way to a wedding in Minnesota, and he was going to talk to a couple of his employees and attempt to get somebody in here at 10 o'clock to spend an hour talking about lawn and garden issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where are they?
Where are they?
7 o'clock.
Yeah. And folks, by the way, we're not going to be on the air Monday. We're going to be celebrating Independence Day along with many of you on July the 5th. So we'll be taking Monday off, but we are going to be here in studio Tuesday. And coming in Tuesday, Tim Richer, he'll kick it off talking about City Hall and courthouse issues. At 9 o'clock, we have City Councilman Jeff Preisner joining us.
Good.
And been a while since Jeff's been with us, so he's coming in at 9 o'clock. Roger Farthing's also going to make an appearance, and we're going to be talking about some Schreiner issues. So that's all coming up Tuesday. All right, I guess we'll hang around a couple of minutes and see whether somebody from Jackson's is going to be joining us.
When you get Tim Preisner or Jeff Preisner next week, you might tell them that I just drove this morning on 21st Street between Wanamaker and 470. They finished the repaving of that section. They ground it and paved the patching and then overlaid it, and it's really nicely done. And
good.
Since I've criticized the street activities of the city so many times, probably ought to say something nice to them.
Now, where do they go now? They started on California, then 21st. What's next?
I don't know. I don't know what the schedule is. They haven't done a lot in terms of publicizing what's happening.
We'll ask Tim, because I know they've got a schedule.
Do they? Okay.
And of course, going next with an overlay, major overlay.
The 29th and Urish roundabout was supposed to have opened on Wednesday. I haven't been out there, so I don't know if it did or not.
Well, it's partially open.
Is it partially?
Yeah. You can go west or east on 29th. That's open.
Okay.
And then you can go north.
But not the south lane.
Not the south. That's going to be torn up for the next 90 days.
Okay. That's
working
that's
on the south lane.
They were talking about that in the press release, and I didn't quite understand it.
Yeah, and then
and
when they
there, so.
Opened up the south link, they're going to shut down the west link.
Okay.
Because they're going to four-lane 29th from Urish to Tallgrass, the entrance of Tallgrass. So that's going to be shut down for about 90 days.
Okay.
And while all of that's going on, they're going to be working on 29th going east to Gainesboro.
Yeah.
And that's going to take...
I think they go all the way to
5 months.
They go to Kings Row by December, I think.
Kings Row, you're right. I'm sorry.
And then
Kings Row.
The rest is to
then they'll shut it down for the winter.
Yeah.
And next spring they'll, fire it up again.
Yeah.
You're right. Kings Row.
It looks like a nice project. 29th has needed to be widened for a long time.
Oh boy.
So, as you and I both agree, I don't know why we didn't put the utility lines underground. That's the only criticism I'm going to have of that project. When all said and done.
Yeah, we had our chance.
Yep.
And again, moving, the expense of moving a utility pole 13 inches.
Or whatever, yeah.
I don't know. Don't get it. Okay, folks, we're going to hang around for a couple of minutes and see if anybody comes in from Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center. If not, we'll see you Tuesday, and I want you all to have a great, great 4th of July weekend. I'm Jim Cates.